The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to Two Chunks in a Hunk. Movie musings for mostly everybody. Hello and welcome to Two Chunks and a Hunk. My name is Jordan Wonders, and this week I am your chunk.
I'm Doge, and don't feed me any more lines from Hunksters, Inc.
Nice.
And I'm Carter, and the moment you catch feelings is the moment you chunk a bullet.
Mm. Very good.
Chunking a bullet. I feel like chunking a bullet is less effective than maybe firing it.
As hard as you can.
Yeah.
I'll throw this metal at you, and it's going to hurt probably.
Hey, hunky boy.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Doge, what's up?
When you say let's, you mean just you and I.
You made me.
Yeah, because we made Doge be the hunk because, Carter, you want to take this one?
Well, on Instagram, he has released, so our scientific cinema scale used to just be this ethereal thing that people imagined.
Just up in the brain.
And it's crazy when you imagine something. A lot of the times the things you imagine, you're let down once you see the actual thing manifest. Yeah. But he's gone and done the scientific cinema scale and made it better than I could have ever imagined. So if you don't follow us on Instagram, definitely go follow us right now and look at one of our most recent posts. Swipe through and look at every, like from buying the poster to God Hath Forsaken Us. Mm. It's a lot of fun.
It's pretty incredible.
It's a ton of fun. It kind of takes us also through the ages of movies in general.
Viewing.
Like the hard copies.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Great job, Doge.
Good job,
Doge.
Thanks, guys.
We definitely took this on for him.
Doge has squirmed himself into a full snail.
Yeah. I don't care for this type of thing.
He's just all squirmed on up.
He deserves it.
Speaking of things squirming on up,
guys, I'm more than just a pretty set of graphic design fingers.
That's true.
I have thoughts about a movie.
Your eyes are up here. My eyes are up here.
Now we are, speaking of movies, coming to the end. We have reached the terminus.
The end of the road.
Ooh. Of our series. This is the end of the Teen's Choice Awards.
That sounds been good.
That sounds ominous when I say it in my sick boy voice.
It's the end of the road. The buck stops.
Am I crazy or is that a little Kevin Conroy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Evening the odds.
I was going to ask you to say evening the odds.
Ooh.
That was good.
Joker.
Nah, you lost it.
No, it's gone now.
There's too much R.
Joker. Evening the odds.
Now you're back.
Oh, wow.
Feels good.
That was very Al Pacino of you.
Guys, I could do so many voices when I'm sick.
I know.
It's the best part of
it. I can do every voice.
I am every voice.
That's my Adam Sandler impersonation.
Every voice.
So who did... we haven't even said the name of the movie.
That's what I'm saying.
Let's do it.
I think I'm hesitant to leave the series behind because it's been so cool, but all good things must come to an end.
That's true.
It's the end of the road.
That was something, probably. The movie that won in the action category for the Teen's Choice Awards was, of course,
Baby Driver. What was it up against, Carter? Baby Driver beat movies like Mad Max Fury Road. Rest and rip. I love that.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Drive.
We saw that together. Oh, Drive is so good.
Snowpiercer.
Yeah.
Wow.
Kingsman. Mm. The Secret Service. Mm.
Snowpiercer is the clear-cut last place in that category for me.
It's funny that Kingsman was also in there. This has that similar, like, very stylized vibe that Kingsman does to me.
I would say for Jordan, unequivocally, Mad Max, Kingsman, and Baby Driver are the top three action movies of the decade. So,
Well, I mean, you're forgetting about a Keanu. You're forgetting about John Wick.
Oh my gosh. 100% I'm forgetting about John Wick.
There'll be a time for that, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. That
The Wickening will come.
Certainly, I would say that likely falls into the category of just hold on to your butts. We didn't forget about it.
Yeah.
I forget he's in Jurassic Park.
Right. Right. Action, like drama and sci-fi, was a pretty tough category, I think.
It really was.
There was a contender in every corner, really. And I think it's one of those where I felt like any of them winning was a possibility.
But yeah.
Kind of from the beginning, I was like, it's going to be
Baby Driver. I was really hoping for Baby Driver. I'm very glad this one won.
Yeah, I was too. And this kind of shows the breadth of, like, I guess not necessarily movie knowledge, but those that voted on it, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm glad this won. I think it's very unique for action. And
oh,
so,
my gosh. Incredibly.
It's very
unique.
Clearly action, but it's like nothing that action has been.
So yeah. Before we go too far into this movie, Doge, do you want to synopsify me, Captain?
I would love nothing so much as the joy of synopsifying you, Captain.
The long play so you can actually go find the synopsis. I would.
Doge.
I feel like I played that off pretty well, and then you had to put me on
would
blast.
Absolutely love nothing more.
Thanks, Shatner. This week's synopsis is written by frequent unwilling contributor Nick Reganis.
Reganis!
Nick writes, indebted to Doc, the icy Atlanta crime lord, Baby, the youthful, talented, but hesitant getaway driver, for years now, has been the constant unstoppable force behind the Kingpin's masterfully planned daring heists.
Are you pronouncing the commas?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Always in sync with his carefully chosen playlists, whether he's burning rubber or strolling down the street, Baby just needs one more job to get off the hook. And maybe even go out on a proper date with the charming waitress, Deborah. Caught up in the bliss of a whirlwind romance, Baby desperately wants out. Oh boy, that's a semicolon there. However, as things get out of hand, will the young designated driver be able to protect those he loves?
Reganis, somehow this is so reductive of this movie. Like, I listening know, to it, it's really like, is. Well, kinda.
I mean, yeah, that's it, technically.
Does Reganis have time in his life for anything else? But
other
writing
than writing
these?
This guy writes so many.
It's thoughtful in a way that it was, like, too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, very much.
How long do we think it took Reganis? Now, granted, he's done thousands, right?
He's done thousands, and the thing you got to figure is, like, I think we did the math one time, and he spent at least 3 years of his life just watching these movies at an average length of 2 hours. Yeah, right. So he can't spend more than like 30 seconds writing a synopsis. So he just cranks these guys out.
I think he writes the synopsis for the one he just finished while he's starting the next one.
Yeah.
And I think with the average length of these synopsis, didn't we say it's like 400 pages worth of content?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my
he's doing like 5 minutes.
Nick, if you're listening, will you please manage our website? A huge load off of us.
Love it. So it'll be Jordan's review section, Doge's review sections, Carter's review section, and then Nick
Reganis.
Let's bring Nick's in got Nick. It. See what he's
it's
got
Nick's
to say.
Nick's corner.
This movie is unique,
very,
very,
and I'm gonna chalk the majority of that uniqueness up to Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Dude is so interesting to me. I like, I think every movie I've seen of his, I can't think of one I don't like. He is the one who brought us things like Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, The End of the World, that bar hopping movie.
Yeah.
He did At World's End, that's right. Yeah. He did Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Oh, I forgot that he did that. We had a possibility of two Edgar Wright movies in this series.
Yep. It makes sense
but
to me.
But y'all hate Scott Pilgrim, apparently.
He's got a unique spin on anything he does.
He really does. And he is so interesting to, and I want to set this up before we move into the movie so that we can look for it. But Edgar Wright has this unique approach to storytelling that he talks about where he says, why explain it if I can show it?
Yeah.
And one of the things that the examples that I've seen used for it in like a breakdown of his style is in Hot Fuzz, you know, the quote unquote average movie to show going from city to country would say, man, I got to move to the country and then fly to the country. And in this movie, it's this progression of Full Signal on the phone into fancy cab to raining bus station to sitting on the bus to losing signal on the phone to sitting outside to an old cab. It's just this cycle all the way through.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of sums up Edgar Wright. We're like, if there's a better way to do it, he wants to find it.
Yeah. And
yeah. One of the exposition things, light, like there's right. very, very rarely something that feels like a line of dialogue that exists for the audience.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's not an improv guy, which I haven't really heard much of directors that they don't want you doing something that is not scripted.
Right.
That's wild to me. I think that has a lot to do with the story he wants to tell.
Yeah.
I was reading something about this, that there was some reviewer that, he's got credentials apparently, but there was some reviewer that said that this is a postmodern musical. He called it like a musical for the modern age, with less dancing and singing, but more just synchronization to the sounds you're listening to.
Oh yeah.
And I find that so fascinating, like, to view this movie through that lens. Let's talk about how it starts. I feel like the best marketing decision they made for this movie was releasing the first 6 minutes of the movie on YouTube when it was in theaters. Did you know they did this?
Yeah.
I think I forgot about that.
Yeah. The first 6 minutes of the movie, the whole first heist, all the way up through them driving out of the parking garage with that just low, like, that whole 6 minutes, they just put it up on YouTube officially.
That's really smart.
In 4K, everything. Yeah. Watch this. And I think that sold so many people on going to see this movie, because the first 6 minutes of this movie are perfect.
Yeah. They're amazing. Like, it's so good.
Ugh, the bam, bam, pull up.
Yep.
The windshield wipers start going to the song. He leans his car back, like his seat back. He's watching them go. Like, it's exciting. There's nothing more exciting than a heist, especially a heist with consequences. The chase, everything. John Bernthal pointing forward and him driving backwards. Like, everything is just so good here.
Yeah, it is so good. And I think part of the smartness too, because I was just thinking of, like, when you watch a trailer for something, they all kind of just look like what Baby Driver looks like the whole time.
100%.
Yeah.
And so it's like, how is anyone going to know the uniqueness of this movie without me showing you this movie?
May I sprinkle some salt for just a moment?
Okay.
I think Suicide Squad thought it was doing this.
I think so.
Setting moments to music and being like, we've scored this in such a way that it's like it's happening for real, like to the song.
When you initially said that, I was like, no, that's not the case. But then I'm thinking, it's so bad at it.
Right.
That maybe it did try and just miss the mark.
I think
so
what happened is, like, you're exactly right. This does feel like a trailer the whole time. And Suicide Squad was the studio brought in a company that cuts trailers to come in and recut the movie. So that's why Suicide Squad feels like a long trailer. And this feels like a long trailer. This just intentionally feels like a long trailer. And Suicide Squad was never meant to feel that way.
One of the coolest things about this movie is that we have an in-universe reason for everything being set to music well. And I think that does something to legitimize the concept.
Oh, for sure.
Like, it's all of a sudden it doesn't feel like a gimmick anymore. Now it's like, that's just the story. This story is that this kid is constantly listening to music.
Yeah. The moment he takes out one headphone and it just kind of
shifts to be really
shifts
thin.
A little bit. Yeah. Then you're like, oh, okay. You're starting to pick up on that this is a role. I've always said that the soundtrack of Baby Driver should have been nominated for best supporting actor, actress, whatever you would call it.
Every song is perfect. And what's crazy is you can go through the soundtrack and, because I bet I've seen this movie 6 or 7 times now. You can go through the soundtrack and I can be like, oh, I know exactly what point in the movie this is, because the music is such an integral part of the story.
Like Peter and the Wolf?
Yeah.
Kind of. How do we talk about that so much?
I know. I started to grin. It's like that, My Fair Lady.
Yeah.
There are things that we land on.
One day we're going to put all of those things in one series and just review them, even if it's not a movie.
It's going to be great. We're going to get Nick out here.
Nick Reganis is going to be here.
We're going to review him. It's going to be good.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I've had. So when I saw this movie, I saw it at Studio Movie Grill, which I hate, because they basically duct tape an iPad to the wall. The screen is so small.
Shots fired.
And like, they leave on like desk lamps and it's all like rolling chairs that you're sitting. I mean, literally there were rolling chairs with desk lamps on in the theater. And there was a couple probably.
Studio Movie Grill's listening, dude?
That's fine. I'm an Alamo boy.
Same.
I'm okay with it. But there was a couple in their late 60s that made out from top to bottom of this movie directly in front of Callie and I.
Yeah. Say that again. They what?
They made out.
From top to bottom?
Of this movie. For the whole movie. For the whole movie they made out.
There you go.
And
my bottom.
Stop making out with my bottom. And it was so distracting. And this movie was so good, I still liked it.
Awesome.
the making out of the movie.
Yes.
Okay.
I think it would have ruined a lesser movie.
Yeah.
I really do. That experience was horrible. Absolutely. I have not been back to Studio Movie Grill
because they're still there.
They're still making out.
That's one of Studio Movie Grill's policies.
You got to have an
old kissy couple in every movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotta have it.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, I don't know that I've met, I'm sure they're out there. I don't know if I've met anybody that watched this movie that wasn't like, this was awesome.
Yeah, I guess you have to not be paying attention.
I think so.
And it's hard not to pay attention.
I'm trying. I've been trying to hold off, but like everything that we're saying, I keep thinking, yeah, it's because of my super pump. Yeah, it's because of my super pump. Yeah, it's because of my super pump. My super pump is in particular the choreographer.
Oh, yeah.
And then in once you get to the finer details, the choreographer and the way that he worked with the sound, the audio editing team,
yeah.
The sound mixer, the sound designer, the composer, all of that stuff to synchronize everything together, because there's that kind of backbeat undercurrent that's going through this whole movie and the whole thing. And the editing too, like I don't know how to encapsulate that in one phrase, but the fact that everything is so synchronized and such a smooth ride that I have no pun intended, I guess, but that just feels like you get on at the beginning and then it doesn't really let you breathe and you don't want to breathe until the end.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I've never seen anything else like that.
Yeah. And it really is interesting how many things you notice as you watch, if you're paying attention to it, the tinnitus coming back, like whenever things are silent. But even things that are like, there's background music and things are syncopated to it.
Yeah.
Or things like the four channels that he flips through at the beginning and every one of those lines comes back in the first half of the movie.
Yep.
It's so interesting.
Yeah. Like, and that gives credit to, it is just as intense to just be sitting in a diner with no action necessarily going on as it is to be chased by eight cop cars.
Right.
Like I maybe even more.
I think that diner scene is, I think Jamie Foxx got to set that day and was like, y'all mind if I put the movie on my back for like just a little bit and just carries that diner scene.
You're talking about when they're in the booth.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
Jamie Foxx is my super pump.
Oh really?
Okay.
Yeah.
Because even Edgar Wright was like, here's an exception.
Just do what you want.
Yeah. Because he does get to improv a lot.
Yeah.
I think reading trivia, how can you not? I mean, we played a game with Jamie Foxx yesterday and all of us decided we want him to be our friend.
Yeah.
Correct. And so there was a lot of fun trivia basically about how Edgar Wright like fangirled over Jamie Foxx in scenes. Cause if he was in a scene with Kevin Spacey, he'd like lean over and be like, Oscar shot, like all these different 100%. Things. But Jamie Foxx, is very good.
He's very, very good.
Oh my goodness.
He is. I think when I saw Ray, I was like, this is legit. Like this wasn't, he just got a perfect role. Like this guy's talented.
Right.
But Bats does this wonderful thing. Bats feels like, I mean, he's clearly, I'd say he's the main antagonist. Would you say?
For most of the movie.
Yeah.
Because he, and his name is Bats, which means basically like he's crazy.
He's crazy.
Yeah.
He's such a perfect Edgar Wright character. He comes in and he is equal parts driving the narrative, but also just,
disrupting.
He's here to screw it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he felt like a Joker type character. Like he's like, I don't care.
He's very scary. Because of that, like unpredictability, he's very scary the whole time, which I love. And also like, and I mean, this is the highest compliment. I hate him. Like the whole movie.
Oh yeah.
Like,
he's the worst.
He's the worst.
It was like such a subtle thing too. It felt like, Matt Damon's Mark Watney. I mean, it was like Jamie Foxx is not changing the way he walks or the way he talks. Like he's not doing like a Gary Oldman under all this makeup, but it's enough to where I'm like, that's Bats.
Right.
Yeah, that's not Jamie Foxx. Yeah. And for someone in, this was 2015. He's a super
2016 or 17.
He's super duper star.
Yeah.
So how can you not be in the moment and think, oh, Jamie, it's just Jamie Foxx.
Yeah. Right.
But he's my super pump.
Absolutely.
I thought it was going to be so many different things.
Sure.
But in the end, I think it was him.
So a couple of things that I just want to point out just to make sure that nobody misses. At the beginning of the movie, John Bernthal says, if you don't hear from me again, I'm probably dead.
Yeah.
It means I'm dead. And that's the last time we ever see or hear him the whole movie. So
I wish he was in more of it. I do like John Bernthal.
Dude,
he was good in this.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Trailers made it seem like he was going to be.
It did. Yeah.
Huge.
Which I think adds to I think that's supposed to be the joke.
Right.
Yeah.
That he's saying like, I'm probably dead if you don't.
They don't even show him die on screen.
Yeah.
If you don't hear from me again, I'm probably dead. And then he's just gone, which is very funny.
He went to go do the Punisher.
That reminds me of
actually of probably right.
Abed in Community at the end of whatever season that is. When he's like, and if we don't get renewed for another season, a meteor came and destroyed the college and we're all dead.
And that's canon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That's so funny.
But real quick, also, Kevin Spacey's in this movie. He's a doo-doo person.
Yep.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he's a doo-doo person that does a really good job at the job that he's been given.
Yeah.
I mean, he is... Kevin Spacey, the actor, is one of my
outstanding.
Favorites.
Yeah. Outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah. Usual Suspects. Seven. All sorts of stuff. He's good at being playing a bad
correct
person.
Well, maybe he doesn't have to try that hard.
Hey. Yeah. It might not be too far away from home base.
Yeah.
For the boy.
But, I mean, he was great for this role.
100%. So good.
And Doc was just so interesting. Kevin Spacey's also really good at that. At just adding a tick or just a rhythm to the way that he talks.
It didn't, something about him didn't work for me.
Really?
Toward the end of this movie.
Okay.
His turn's weird.
I don't buy Doc at the very end being like, you know what? Actually, I'm going to help Baby and Cinderella.
Yeah.
And like taking a shotgun out into the parking garage. Like
that was pretty twisty.
That doesn't feel like Doc. It feels like Doc would be like, kid, you're on your own.
Yeah. I thought they were going to go back and he was going to be packed up and gone. Like moved on out of here. The second heist, the first one with bats, the one where we bring in Eddie No-Nos, which is Flea.
Yeah.
And then I don't remember the other guy's name, but he's the one that gets the Mike Myers mask.
Gosh, that's so funny.
This is almost my super pump was just these two as a collective look at just the casting.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Their cartoon, like everybody fits what someone would draw when they're thinking of this role.
I think that's the thing. Like this movie, every character is a cartoon and like there's very little three dimensionality.
Yeah.
Right. Characters.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's by design. Like something about this movie feels elemental in a way that's like, this feels like a movie that would have been made 25 years ago.
Right.
35 years ago.
Right.
This feels like a movie my dad would watch on like a Saturday afternoon being like, I watched this and it's amazing. Like it's just this great action movie, but just made now. And I think that's intentional. It's by design. I think that's not a weakness of the movie.
No.
That it's so reductive. I think it's a huge strength of it.
Yeah. Because this is not, is this an original screenplay?
Yeah.
So this is not based on anything.
Right.
I expected, like, I don't have anywhere to put except just perfect writing. Like, wow, what a great, that's exactly how I thought No-Nos would be.
Right.
But he does it so well that you feel like there was content before to create that.
Exactly.
That's in his mind.
There's something about the story too of like, he's a getaway driver. He's in love with a girl who works at a diner. They're trying to skip town. That could be set in 1930 or 2030.
Which I think is super on purpose.
I agree.
And Edgar Wright, there's a lot of thoughtfulness to this movie. He's got a great library of movies.
That's Edgar Wright's calling card. Okay. Edgar Wright's my super pump. Let's move past it. I love him. Let's keep going. But yes. His calling card is thoughtfulness.
And I was going to say too, specifically because he has wanted to do this for a while.
Yes.
Like before he made Baby Driver, this was an idea that he had for a long time.
He did a music video for somebody that was this basically.
Yeah.
Like a decade ago.
Yeah. So super interesting.
So this scene where they're doing the job and they're getting all the stuff and it's Bat's first interaction with Baby and Baby has the headphones in and we hear the music and we see Doc talking. This is maybe one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie.
This is wonderful.
When he says, how do I know that kid just heard anything that you said? He pops the headphone out and just repeats verbatim everything Doc said.
Yeah.
Finishing it with any questions the same way that Doc did. And it's just Ansel Elgort is kind of gangly.
Every time you say his name, it feels like you're stumbling over trying to say something else.
Right. Yeah. I might be off, by the way.
No, I'm not saying you say it wrong. I'm saying dude's got too many vowels and consonants in the wrong order.
It feels like he's 6'3". I think he probably is pretty tall.
Yeah.
He's a little gangly. He's handsome in a boyish way and so unbelievably charming. Don't you think so? I don't think he's conventionally like John Hamm handsome. I think he's like,
he's not hamsome.
Right.
I'm not quick enough today.
I think he's like, you know what I mean? He's got that boyish look.
Yeah.
But he's so unbelievably charming in this movie that you can't help but like Baby.
You know what? Baby, even as a character, felt a little bit like autistic in like the way that he was a savant at one thing. Like I'm totally fine if that's part of the narrative. Like I think that there was a part to it that was yes, there's a trauma that he had as a child.
Right.
But I think, I don't know. I've done a lot of like studying on that.
Right.
And it felt like he, that had to be some kind of inspiration of like the way that he acts and things like that.
I could see that.
Which yeah, I think is that. Great. Like I'm saying I love that. If that is part of it, like I love that that is the protagonist.
It would be very Edgar Wright to just not even fill that blank in.
Sure. Right. And I don't think we need it.
Yeah.
Filled in.
Right. Yeah. I agree. But speaking of charming, this is the opinion I have about this movie that I feel like has the most potential for disagreement between the three of us. Is it Lily
James?
James?
Yeah.
Dude, I love her. I've seen her in several things and she is consistently so unbelievably likable. Mm-hmm. Like, I think she's a very good actor. Like, I think she's great. She actually has a really good voice.
Mamma Mia.
She's great in Mamma Mia.
Cinderella too.
Does she sing in that? I haven't seen that. But she, I don't know. There's something about her that is like so easy to buy that your main character can fall in love with her because she's just so.
She does a great job in this.
Well, she is who Disney chose before they even knew it. Like the first of doing live action of their old cartoons.
Right.
They took maybe the most famous princess.
So this might be spicy. She does a great job in this movie to me. Her acting, her physicality.
Yeah.
Like it's really great. Her accent work in this movie.
Yeah, her accent's not great.
Is my super dump.
Oh, really?
It's maybe the worst accent work I have ever heard. Mm. Like she can't manage an American accent at all, much less that like that Atlanta, like deep South molasses accent.
Yeah.
In any way that's believable.
Is she
at
British?
All. Yes. Yeah. Debilitatingly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, Daniel Craig, for what he was able to pull off
exactly.
Times Out.
I think there's
you had
probably,
to go cartoon, you know.
It's funny. There's probably more in common with a Cajun and a like true deep Georgia accent with and British than it seems like there is.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, she just can't pull it off.
She can't pull it off here. And it took me out of the movie several times because it's just like I had to like really process what she was saying because it didn't, I don't know.
Yeah.
It just didn't work for me.
She has the human version sometimes of Pacha's kids' eyes when they don't want to go to bed and they're just like fluttering and sad when they're just like, please dad. And their eyes are like fluttering. She has that as like a person sometimes. Yeah, and it's very funny.
So fun.
But yeah. So for that reason, Baby and, good grief. Why can't I remember her name?
Deborah.
Also? Thank you. Baby. Obviously Baby and Deborah's relationship works really well for me in this movie because I buy that she's just ready to fall in love with him as fast as he is with her. And they're both ready to get out.
Well, that's the thing. Like if this, I think it's by design that we were talking about earlier, like if this movie wasn't so elemental, if it was really interested in giving us three-dimensional portraits of our characters,
weak.
Their relationship is so reductive and she just immediately falls for him and is like, I want to get out of town with you. And like all that stuff that feels out of place.
Yeah.
Unless the story we're telling is very like, no, these are these paper cutouts and we're moving them in a way that is amazing to watch.
Right. Yeah. It's almost dreamy.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. Speaking of dreamy.
The sequence when they are having dinner.
Oh
felt
yeah.
Like a dream.
100%.
Yeah,
so good.
And speaking of dreams, let's all nod off and wake up in a wonderful place where we can deliver some shout announcements. Welcome to Shout Announcements.
That's awful.
It's always bad, guys. It's always bad. Welcome to Shout Announcements. It's the part of the show. Now, we have something that's been cooking. It's done been cooked. It's out of the oven and it's steaming fresh sitting on our windowsill. It's a pie and that pie is Patreon. And what we want you to do is let that let that pie steam hand lift you up and float you on over to our window. Please subscribe to our Patreon is what we're saying.
Yeah. Do you ever?
Very clear way that's easy to understand. That's what we're asking.
Concise.
People to do.
That's my goal.
You ever have the awful recurring dream that you're like walking around in your old high school or you're at prom or you're at your wedding and you don't have your Patreon?
Ugh.
It's so embarrassing.
Whenever I leave with my Patreon off, ugh. It is horrendous.
Like you walk out and you're like patting the pockets, like even the top of your head, and you might not even wear a hat like Jordan does, but it's like, where's my,
forgot to put
my
Patreon.
I don't have my Patreon.
It's embarrassing.
So if you don't want to be embarrassed,
there's cool stuff.
Yeah. By the time this episode goes live, we're going to have a special section of our website where you can see our reviews of movies that we have seen recently.
They're not full reviews. They're just little chunks.
It's called review chunks.
Two chunks, review chunks.
There's also a spot where you can see our full history. At a glance, what we've rated, the things we've talked about.
And occasionally a special little bonus guy.
Oh, and I forgot about this until right now. It's important to know the Oscars were a couple of days ago. So whatever movie won Best Picture, you are likely either stoked about it or didn't hear about that movie until it won Best Picture. We're going to be reviewing that movie. That's going to be a Patreon exclusive episode. So keep your peepers peeped for that guy later this month.
Peep those peepers.
Almost as embarrassing as not having your Patreon when you leave the house.
Yeah.
Subscribe, rate, review to this podcast.
Would love it. Would love it if you
did. If you're listening to it and you're like, man, I wish they had done this for 2 years already.
Guess what?
We have.
Surprise.
Man, I wish that I could get notified every week when one of these pops out. Guess what? You can.
It'll automatically download.
Your road trip opportunities are only getting longer.
That's true.
With our content. Like you can go on up into Canada at this point, probably.
You could cross country with our whole show.
I wonder how far you could drive listening to Only Us.
We'll do that math.
Okay. We'll have that math.
We've almost certainly talked about this before.
Have we?
I don't think so.
I think we have, because I think I remember saying you could drive your car or it would just drive you crazy to listen to us for that long.
I don't remember that, but that's a good line.
Are you serious?
I don't remember that either.
So I could have sprung that on you and you guys would have been like, wow, good line, but instead I've ruined it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's correct.
He didn't ruin it. It still seems cool.
No, it's ruined.
What did he say? Rotten Tomatoes Critics is
tomatoes.
A box that we would love to check.
Rotten Tomatoes.
And in 3 weeks, we're going to be able to apply to do that.
Wow.
Wow. Would help if we had another
million
998 million reviews.
Oh, wow.
That's a step big up. Number.
Yep.
That's a big number.
Just 8,000. It's like, why is everybody reacting so strange to my million? But yeah, please do that. It's hard for me to say my announcements because I'm so excited about the next one.
Yeah, we got a big thing, to toss your way. If you live down here in the Southern United States where the three of us live, you may have noticed when you look out your window or when you drive to work or to school, some of that good green grass starting to get a little taller.
Yep. Yep.
Starting to peek its head up and say, maybe it's time for me to come out again this year. Maybe it's time for me to start growing. And when the grass starts growing,
you know what that means.
Dad starts mowing.
Yep. Yeah.
If you got a dad, if you know a dad, or honestly, if you got dad energy.
If you are a dad.
You're mowing your yard real soon. And what do dads do when they mow their yard?
Well, first of all.
Get very sweaty.
Yeah, they get very sweaty.
Second of all.
Big old glass of sweet tea.
Before they even do it.
Yeah.
Second of all, they come inside, big glass of sweet tea, prop up on the recliner, and toss on. Maybe some TNT.
TNT.
Maybe
FX,
some
TBS.
FX. FX got the movies.
TBS.
We're going to be bringing you a brand new series that we are honestly very stoked
I'm
about.
I'm so amped about this.
And it's called Dadderday Afternoon. These are going to be all those movies that all of the folks with mega dad energy love to watch on television. Even if they own them, they'll watch them on TV and sit through the commercials anyway.
It's true.
These are going to be action staples. The ones that just really encapsulate that kind of like that dad strength, the big forearm, the sweaty mowing energy.
For instance, our first episode coming at you next week.
It's such a Dadderday Afternoon movie.
Our first episode coming at you next week is going to be over the seminal and instant classic, forever classic, Die Hard.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Very
gracious.
Much.
I literally cannot wait.
We're also going to be talking about things like Lethal Weapon.
Terminator.
We're talking Rambo.
Like Terminator. Things like Rambo. All the big dad energy is coming here to this podcast.
Do you need some more Sylvester? Do you need some Arnold? Do you need some Bruce?
My uncle.
I think I do. My very own uncle, Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about next week.
And he'll be on the show. You can quote me on that. Anyway,
everybody freshen up your Bruce Willis impersonations. That's never been an attempt.
Yeah, I don't think I've even tried before.
Come on down the coast. We'll have a couple laughs. Wow. I'm going to start a thing and it's going to be something we say from now on. Ready? It's going to be a great catchphrase for us.
Okay.
Dadderday Afternoon's coming. Better water that grass.
I like it.
I don't.
We're back.
Yep.
We are.
We are back to the show, which means we're back to the back half of this movie. Yeah?
Yeah.
Things get complicated.
Yes, that's how it works.
Right? Things get complicated in the back half of this movie. And I also think it's where this movie shines is in, because it really feels like it's a three-act structure where the second act is about 8 minutes long.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. The second act is the heist gone wrong in the middle.
Yeah.
And the killing of what's his face and calling baby back into action. I mean, that's really...
I think we can view our heists as a three beat. That we establish the way that these heists work with the very beginning. We reinforce it with the middle, but it starts to go a little wrong. And then we have one heist that just balloons out of control.
Right.
Because that's crazy.
Guys. In acts three and four at the end, I think it's probably a five act structure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which means they're rapid fire because this is not a long movie.
Oh, big time. Yeah.
This is not a long movie at all. But in the back half of this movie is where a lot of our action starts to really sync up to music, which is so cool. The synchronization with music escalates as the movie goes on.
The gunshots is what's so impressive to me.
Oh my gosh. To Tequila in that warehouse. Yep. Just that.
Oh yeah.
It is so like, so that warehouse thing, I think is the first time we really get a taste for how crazy Vats is.
Oh yeah.
When he just starts popping off.
Just because somebody looked at him weird.
Hey, the butcher is such a cool character.
Yeah, he's a great character.
That's such a great, like, that feels like John Wick almost. It feels wicky a little bit.
And his whole, like, the charcuterie. Like,
yeah.
Referring to everything as a cut of meat is so cool.
It's so cool.
Like,
he's
really always brilliant. Has a cover. Like, if you were to record him, he's talking about.
So I read a trivia that the cop that was the big cop that was like mouthing off to Bats was the security guard from the bank that they robbed earlier. And I don't buy that at all.
No, I don't think you need to do that.
No.
We're just supposed to know that Bats has a history.
Right.
Because he alludes to the fact that like, have you met me before?
If they show him on camera, then I believe it, but I don't think they did. So.
Yeah, I don't think they did either.
Yeah. And speaking of Bats, one of the scenes I love is after this whole thing goes wrong and he's freaking out saying that, you know, something about a four letter name. And he's like, Bats isn't my real name. And he says, I know that, Leon.
Yeah.
To me, it's just, I don't know. There's all these little things that just explode the universe so much bigger so briefly. And then we never go into it. And I think that's so interesting.
It equal parts makes you want there to be prequels and a series
touch it again.
See, I think we used to see a lot more of that kind of stuff where we would just make it explode the world and make it feel bigger and then never touch it again. And I think we probably still have the same level of that stuff, but now all of that gets picked over and we pick those bones clean to make another one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Every bit of expansion is a potential path for a sequel.
To contrast this with John Wick, which I believe is probably the best action movie of the last decade. Maybe not. I like Baby Driver more.
They're all up there, man.
But it's tough. Contrast it to John Wick, like John Wick has those elements too, where it's like we refer to things and we could just leave them and never go back to them. But I don't think we would identify them as such now that we've seen John Wick 2 and John Wick 3 Parabellum.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, it's interesting too, because the energy has to be placed somewhere else. Like you've got to be pretty economical about that. When you have Keanu Reeves, put it in that character.
Yeah.
Right.
But when you have someone like Ansel, then it's like,
I don't know.
Who's great. And he's supposed to just be a blank sheet.
Yes.
But it's so much about the writing and everything, the whole environment.
Yes. It feels like the writing was almost a challenge. Like I'm going to take these two-dimensional blank sheet characters and make a movie that you care about.
That is so Edgar Wright though.
It really
is. Edgar Wright's thing. It to me seems to be like, I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it my way. And my way is going to be a little weird.
I think that's why he had such a...
So don't go off script.
Right. Well, I think that's why he had such a big falling out with Marvel
over Ant-Man. Oh, I'm sure. He probably said, get out. And they said, nah, you get out.
Yeah.
We haven't even talked about Baby's relationship with Joe, his foster dad.
Love Joe.
Dude, it's so sugary sweet it's in really the middle sweet. Of this movie, and it fits.
Ansel's a great dancer.
He's a trained ballerina.
Or like Dancel in a row.
He did ballet. And he's actually dating a ballerina.
apparently Callie was telling me he's been dating the same girl since he was like 16.
Yeah, Chels told me that too. That must be one of those
well-known type things.
Yeah, that we don't know.
Yeah.
Also, I think he's a pretty good singer from what I understand. Like,
I mean, he's a musician. Yeah, he has a side project.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Probably explains why he knew what he was doing with those right hands during the
piano
part. Yeah.
Oh, he did? Yeah. It was actually...
I mean, it was just a little close enough.
The me person was like... Cool. Yeah. I was doing it with him, but my song would be like, come, can't cool, can't. Like when you're messing up on guitar.
Name, that one. That's what his name
that
sounds
is
like.
But the relationship with Joe here is so cool. I think that there's something so unique about just the way that everything rounds out in this movie. So we watch Joe listen to music by putting his hand on a subwoofer. And then one of the last things we see Baby do is put his hand down on the car speaker because the gunshots in his ears has made the tinnitus so bad that he can't hear.
Yeah.
And it's
to hear his mom singing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's just so airtight to me.
It really is.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, I think it was so fun. Like the, no, I'm not gonna say bullet crossed lovers, but like Isaac Gonzalez and John Hamm. Mm-hmm. Like I really like that dynamic.
Yeah. Bullet crossed lovers is very fun. Did you make that up just now?
Uh-huh.
It's very good.
Hey, band name.
Ooh, bringing them back. I mean, it felt like this was the, let's get the all-stars in here for the final heist.
Yeah.
And the relationship, you talk about relationships that Baby has. It seemed sweet. Like maybe that is
with them.
I almost super dumped that John Hamm didn't just immediately like, but then I'm like, he's not Bats. Like he had so many opportunities to like take away. Cause sometimes they leave this thing hanging to where it's like, okay, a real villain would just shoot.
Right.
But he doesn't really feel like a villain. Like we're even hearing about like his past life and
Well, and it even seems to me like his goal wouldn't have been to kill him up until things got so crazy.
Yeah.
Or to kill Deborah.
His goal is to kill Deborah in front of him. Like he doesn't even care if he's somewhere else and Deborah's alive. Yeah. He wants him to be there to watch. Yeah.
Right. But I love the diner scene when Isa's character is talking about when John Hamm goes crazy.
Yeah.
And just the look on John Hamm's face made me scared.
Oh my gosh, dude.
It made me scared in the theater.
Yeah.
It also made me scared on my couch in my home in the daylight. He's intense.
In the beginning,
when Jamie Foxx claps right after that,
it just cuts that tension with that knife.
Oh, that is the most tense scene.
It adds a new tension.
For real.
So at the beginning, when he's flipping through the different movie scenes, the last thing that we see is a bullfighter talking about the bull sees red and the bullfighter is now on foot and like all this stuff.
Yeah.
Mirroring the end of this movie. This is an Edgar Wright move. He does this in Shaun of the Dead where Sean's flipping through TV and the channels are finishing each other's sentences.
That's funny.
Spelling out the remainder of the movie.
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah.
He's just brilliant, but he likes this move, this funny TV flipping through the channels thing. But yeah, the bullfight perfectly mirror. I mean, that's, he sees red. When he sees red, he's angry like a bull. I mean,
and John Hamm is lit by this deep red light from within that police car.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so good.
There again.
Man.
Oh, but the heist gone wrong at the very end is one of the coolest sequences that I've seen maybe in any movie, starting with Baby telling the woman, don't go in, because it's the woman he recognizes from
the day before
with the nephew, who was a great character, by the way.
That was based off of somebody who was helping, like, influence Edgar Wright's writing.
I think he was consulting for Criminal Activity.
Yeah. Was saying like, this is something that has actually happened before.
Right.
Like they just bring their family along. And I love that the kid knew more about it. Like he's definitely done this a couple times. Yeah. Poor guy. Another Edgar Wright thing is gruesome violence.
Correct. And rapid.
Oh yeah.
Very quick.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And the blink.
I'm talking about Bats.
Mm-hmm. This whole thing, they run out and then Bats is just gone. Run through the pipe and everything goes crazy.
So I think I would call this act four.
Yeah, probably. That makes sense.
This heist is act four. And then we get a little brief break. And then act five is the bullfight, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Starting at the diner, pretty much.
Yeah.
It makes sense to me. So like the end of act four would be dropping Joe off at the home.
And we get a little bit of a break.
Yeah, that's good. But the sprint through town and through the park and through, I think that was the Mall of Georgia. Like, all of that stuff is so well done.
Something about his jacket and him running across that green gave me Ferris Bueller vibes.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
as you're describing it, I started to think that. That's fun.
Yeah.
I totally see that.
I don't know if it's intentional, but that's where my mind
went. Great thing about Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because he does it so much and doesn't tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah. Edgar Wright, even.
Yeah.
This is an example of Ansel Elgort being so lanky and goofy that when he runs, it's just like, go buddy, go buddy, go,
go, go, go. Yeah. It looks like one of those octopuses that walks on the ocean floor.
I'm
talking about.
Yes.
We've got a friend who dances like that.
He plays drums like that too.
Yeah.
Is checking your pulse while you run a thing?
I don't know. It looks like he was about to pass out.
I know.
He's trying to figure out if he's going to pass out.
He was running and like, as he was touching the pulse, it was like, am I okay? Am I okay? Am I okay? That whole time. It adds to the intensity for sure. But at the very end of this chase.
Wait, isn't he doing that to have a beat of some kind? Doesn't he want rhythm for his action?
Oh, maybe.
So he's feeling his own heartbeat.
Shut up. Is that
does he have his? Think? That's does amazing. He have headphones in at that point?
No.
Oh, I haven't thought that's what about he's doing that. Then.
I totally thought that's what that's supposed to be.
Wow.
Like the only way he can find a beat is just to naturally listen to his heart.
What on earth?
Wow.
Yeah. Cool.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you got this. You take the rest of it.
Yeah.
No, you understand this movie way better than we do.
When he steals the car from the woman at the very end of this and throws her purse back.
Yeah.
And all that stuff.
I love that. That's the breadcrumb. Like that leads to.
Yeah. Cause he doesn't have his iPod with him. Cause then he sits in the car trying to find the radio station.
Yeah. Right.
Trying to find something. Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. I need to watch this again.
I was also reading a thing that was saying that if he's been boosting cars since he was 12, then the two things he would have collected the most of would have been iPods and sunglasses.
Sure, just an assumption of like what people leave in their car.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's why he's got, you know, pink sparkly iPods or whatever and so many sunglasses. We haven't even talked about the sunglasses gag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That he just always has an extra pair of sunglasses that he can pull out.
Extra pairs the first time he meets Bats.
Yeah. Slaps it off his face. He just pulls the side. Isn't it John Bernthal that slaps him off?
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Because he takes them and puts them on and he just pulls another one out.
That was a clean slap.
Slaps those off and then he pulls out a third pair.
Yeah.
It's this made me want to dig out my iPod and sync it back up again. And I know that's redundant because I could stream anything I want from my phone.
The clicking of the wheel?
Yeah.
Yep.
Good. It's a good thing.
Yeah. And I like the look back at, okay, that was the last gift he was given before his parents died. He was listening to it in the accident, like all that stuff. The tapes he makes are very interesting. It's a cool dynamic. Another example of exploding our world out and not touching it again, which I like. It can be done wrong. You can give me stuff where it's like, well, that doesn't make sense without context. But in this way of just like, this is just something he does. I like it. But I do think it's time to talk about.
He actually made those.
I don't think so.
You know what I mean? Because he's like actually playing those parts on those instruments.
On the soundtrack for the movie, there's somebody's name.
Gotcha.
It could be the name of his side project. I don't know. But there's somebody's name on it.
Is like An Solo or something.
That doesn't sound right.
With like a O with a strike through, like the Ghostbuster symbol.
Actually, that might be it. So maybe he did do it.
Huh.
That'd be
I wish there was a way to find out.
If only. The end of this movie, when he goes and he runs away from John Hamm's character and he gets the, he steals the car from the two guys that are vaping in their car. And the reveal that it was not weed, but was in fact a Hayden vape.
Is so funny.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But that and the chase up through that parking garage and all that stuff.
Terrifying.
With the car falling off.
Quick update. It's Kid Koala who does that.
Okay.
It's
so not
In Solo.
Okay.
Oh, good.
It's just such a unique climax to a movie. And so I'll go ahead and say my super dump is how quick Doc changes sides. I could have
good on you for holding off on that. We talked about that earlier. You almost.
I know. I didn't want to.
Getting close to it.
I didn't want to slam dunk both. but yeah, it just felt too convenient to me.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with the flop. I'm okay if it's like, I just like the kid so much. That's okay with me.
Yeah.
But I just need a little more, maybe.
I think if we'd seen compassion from him, I think just a small change to some of the dialogue at the restaurant scene, I would have bought this a lot better.
Yeah.
Like if he took baby's no, if he let baby get out with
and something
girl,
else
and then baby
go back.
At the end of it, he was like, baby, my driver bailed and you're the only person I trust to do this.
Yeah.
And appealed not as a threat, but appealed to their relational history.
Right.
I think I would buy in that they would have enough relational equity to cash in on it and get him to flip sides at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe I would have appreciated, some sort of like maybe some moment between the two of them where he could tell him like, I know why you want to do what you want to do. I wanted the same thing at one point, you know, like,
or if he, even if he's like, man, kid, I owe somebody too. And once I'm paid up, I'm gone.
Right.
Yeah.
Take advantage, get out. That
exactly.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would have really benefited from tightening up that. It's the one thing that feels like a true plot hole in this whole movie to
me. Yeah.
That's what I kind of alluded to mine earlier, but I'll go ahead. My super dump is, that John Hamm's character, he is presented to be way more like, especially if you hurt his girl, like someone looked at her the wrong way. It's alluded to and he killed them.
So right.
This is, yeah. I understand it needs to be drawn out and this is the penultimate chase here, but I need Baby to get shot in the leg or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, let's...
Isaac Gonzalez's line in the back of the car when she's like, do you remember when you did that? Because that guy looked at me funny. He's like, yeah. And she's like, Bats just looked at me funny. I was like, oh. Yeah. And he just, the first words out of his mouth, he goes, you want me to kill Bats?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
crazy.
Oh, I know.
But I hear you.
So I'm like, but she's dead. That, he like, watched her die, right. And it's Baby's fault. And he didn't just shoot Baby. And again, that ends the movie, right?
Yeah.
The movie's over.
Yeah.
But that's the one thing. And that's what's great about Edgar Wright is you have to... On a movie podcast review where you have to find something wrong, you have to be so
almost pedantic about it. Yeah.
Kind of nitpicky. No. Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's a credit to him. He's not leaving a whole lot of loose ends.
No, definitely not.
The man makes a tight movie.
Tight.
Tight. Very, I mean, down in a burst of flame for John Hamm's character. That was a pretty fun death.
Yeah, it's a very fun death.
That was a good finale.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the going to jail?
I like that. I like that we just don't get off scot-free because he's a nice boy.
Yeah.
I like that we hear people say that he's a nice boy. I love the people on the stand that are like, you know, he actually threw me my purse and like apologized. And she was like, he said no. He said don't go in. He was so nice. And then Joe being like, he's a good kid. All that stuff is so good. But I like that we don't live in a universe in this movie where it's like, glad he's a good kid. Let's just give him probation for all the murder.
Right. Do you feel like the end is supposed to be what we think is actually reality?
That's what I was going to ask too, because we have that dream set in the 50s earlier, and then this starts the same way, but then fades to color at the end.
I think...
Is he in jail for 25 years?
No, I think he probably gets out of parole, but they did not age at all, and I think that's probably intentional. I think it's probably just to say he's going to get out, and it's going to be something like this, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it feels to me. Fine.
That vision is what's getting him through those 5 years. I think
that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
Because we've been given no reason to think that he wouldn't get out in 5 if he has the option.
Yeah.
Because he's been shown to be like a compassionate and like overall, quote unquote, well-behaved person. The kicker
to me is that this starts in that kind of Kodachrome black and white vibe, because if it started in full color, I think we have no reason to doubt the frame of the movie. Right. You know what I mean? But the fact that it starts according to that same visual language that we establish is a dream, kind of like dream thing.
Yeah. Then,
yeah.
I don't think it's a dream like, and he never got out and that's his dying vision.
I think that's just what he's fixated on to get him through that time.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, we've never been given a reason to think that Deborah won't wait for him.
I think Baby died in the first heist and everything else is just his last vision before he slips eternally into that good night.
Head explodes.
We're going to become that kind of podcast now. The podcast where everything's a conspiracy theory about
guys,
the movie.
I finally know the ending of Inception.
It makes sense to me now.
It all makes sense.
His totem is his hair.
His totem is his Oscar. And now that he has an Oscar, he can go to sleep or wake up. I don't remember
which. Oh, gosh.
Should we rate this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Using science, maybe?
Let's do it.
The newly visually aided scientific cinema scale
is... I see it in my mind's
eye. Perfect. And as follows. The best thing we can ever say about a movie is own it, don't lend it.
Buy that poster.
The next best thing, that's buy it. Followed by rent it. And then stream it. After that is forget it. And last, but certainly least, the worst thing we could ever say about a movie...
God hath forsaken us.
We all have sick voice, so.
God hath forsaken us.
That was good.
That was pretty good, actually.
Like, as the Enterprise is.
These are the voyages of the Two Chunks and a Hunk podcast. I'll go first.
Yeah.
Poster me, please. This movie's incredible. It's so good.
Yeah.
This was a blind buy. I did not go see this in theaters. But it was on sale on Black Friday a couple of years ago. And I was like, I've heard good things about it. And I bought it and then watched it and was so glad that I bought it.
I do remember this conversation with you about it.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's so good.
I buy the poster too. I think this is a poster movie. Like I don't know. It just feels so appropriate outside of it being a really good movie. It's also just feels like if this was some kind of advertisement, it's a really cool poster.
Oh yeah.
I think for me, I'm going to stream it. No, I'm buying the poster. I'm buying the poster. This movie's awesome. I love Edgar Wright. I love pretty much everything he does. And this is what action movies should be to me.
Yeah.
Not reliant on just explosions. Like, there's more to it. And it's so interesting.
Yes.
This is a poster. Easy.
Yeah.
And the poster's cool too.
Poster's very cool.
That pink?
Yeah. Oof. V cool.
Give it.
I like. I'm in.
So that marks the end of the Teen's Choice Awards. That was a good one.
That was fast.
You if guys we chose may some good say movies. So.
Yeah, was Baby Driving this series?
Nice.
Because I feel like it's done so quickly.
Bell bottoms. That's my impression of bell bottoms.
Of the actual pants. Because they talk.
Don't forget that we're moving on to Datterday Afternoon. Our series.
In the park.
It's our series.
That was so bad.
It's brought to you by Speedstick Deodorant.
And apparently the same band that did the Full House theme song.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever happened to? Why is it that voice?
I don't know. Why is it somebody stepped on Kermit's toe and then was like, you have to sing this.
Whatever happened to predictability?
Why are there so many songs about Full House?
The grass is greener, the barbecue's hotter, and Home Depot's open 24/7.
It's Datterday afternoon.
Datterday afternoon.
And we're starting with Die Hard.
The grass is growing, the boys are a-mowing.
So come out to the coast.
What an interesting gumbo of mixed metaphors we're cooking up.
I mean, this is exactly what the channel known as TNT does.
That's
all the
true.
Time.
That's very true.
Climb on up in the vent with me. There's plenty of room. Tape a gun to your back. Well, to end this week's episode, I'd like for us each to try something different. Say our name this time.
Ooh.
And what song you would add to this movie.
Yeah. Okay.
You know already.
Mm-hmm. I have a go-to song for this kind of scenario all the time.
Really?
Yep.
For Two Chunks and a Hunk, I'm Jordan Wonders. And because he specifically talked about it, I really feel like Hotel California should have popped up at some point.
Yeah.
It would have been really cool. Just a slow-mo shot to that. On the darkness highway.
Yep.
Would have been good stuff.
Yep.
I'm Doge. I really wish there had been a heist set to Part of the Plan by Dan Fogelberg. That's a great song. Look it up if you don't know it.
I'm Carter. And the White Stripes Conquest.
Mm.
Yeah.
Woo-wee. That's my walk-up song. Like if I was ever a baseball player boy.
Or a wrestler.
A wrestler. It's just perfect. I think we could do some kind of Baby Driver type movie with just Jack White.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
And Muse, maybe?
Yeah.
Mm. Mm.
Muse.
Accidentally gave you peanut butter, boy.
Yeah, I feel like any action sequence, heist or whatever, could be set really well to that Muse. What is it? Is it Knights of Sidonia? That's the...
Yeah.
No, it's not Knights of Sidonia.
Yeah, that's Knights of Sidonia.
No, but the one that starts with that, like... Bing, dibbing, dibbing, dibbing.
I think that's City Escape.
Yeah. Sorry, I meant that's my bad. I meant City Escape from Sonic Adventure 2 Battle.
Rolling around at the speed of sound.
Okay, see you guys.